Now it's time for Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party.
We have Tracy for another week. Tracy is currently in the state opening of Parliament, I believe, but I spoke with her earlier this morning and we talked about the incident in Parliament yesterday and what New Zealand First is thinking about the TPPA 11. Well, I'll start by asking, how was the commission opening yesterday?
It was fine. It was fine. Obviously, there was a little drama towards the end of it, but generally, you know, it was fine. And the drama wasn't as big as people might think it was. It was just people flexing their muscles, really.
Yeah, what was that about?
What it was about numbers and the fact that at the business committee, which is really, the business committee has a representative from every political party on it, and they organise, you know, they have a conversation and organise how is the House going to run. So we want to sit this many hours, and it has to be, it doesn't have to be unanimously agreed on, but it does sort of have to be most people agree on how this is going to, you know, how many hours we're going to sit and how certain debates are going to take place. So the business committee had sort of sat and agreed, and everybody had agreed that Trevor would be elected unopposed to the speaker's chair. And then I would say, because I'm sitting over here watching, Jamie Lee Ross must have done a count, and he went and had a word to Simon Bridges. And for whatever reason, they thought, well, either they thought they had the numbers or they thought they'd argue they had the numbers. And so Simon Bridges came across the House quite animated, you know, really aggressive and animated, and spoke to Chris Hipkins, and pretty much saying they were going to challenge Trevor as the Speaker. So going back on their earlier arrangement, basically.
Yeah, because I was under the impression that they supported Trevor's selection.
Oh, they did. They had earlier in the day. Yes, they'd basically given a commitment. Yep, that we've agreed. That's fine. We'll elect them unopposed. And then, for whatever reason, they saw an opportunity to, I don't know, have a bit of drama, I guess.
Is this part of their strategy of being the strongest opposition?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting strategy, because I'm not quite sure how long the New Zealand public are prepared to have petulant people decide that they're going to, you know, toss their toys out of the cot each time they don't get what they want. So, you know, there's a level that I think they can take this to, but I think that's what it was. They wanted to spoil the government's swearing in, and they managed to do that. They managed to get attention on themselves and spoil the... what had been agreed would just be the, you know, it's just a standard practice that this is how it goes. It's part of the pomp and ceremony, I suppose. And they managed to get their names in the paper. Good on them.
So,
if that's your target for success, well, then they succeeded.
Right.
So, you know, there you go.
What's the difference between yesterday's opening and what's happening in Parliament today?
Okay, so today, I mean, yesterday was... the Chief Justices were sent by the Governor-General, and it was the most cursory part. So it was really making sure that the members of Parliament who had shown up took the oath. I mean, you've got the ministers who'd taken an oath with the Governor-General to provide her with advice, which was a different oath, and this one that we took yesterday, which was about making sure that we would... you know, pledge allegiance to the Queen, I suppose, basically, and do everything to the best of our ability. So they're slightly different oaths. So that was to get all that out of the way, so that today there's the massive big state opening. So the military bands are actually practicing out there on the forecourt in front of Parliament. The Governor General herself will now be here today. She will read a speech from the throne, which has been written with the current, you know, government partners, to set the direction that this government commits itself to over the next 3 years. So she'll read that in place of the Queen. And then we'll go into the House at 2 o'clock and we will start the debate. So we will start to actually, you know, do speeches. And I think there's a piece of legislation coming in this evening. But we wouldn't have been able to do any of that if we hadn't got sworn in yesterday.
So the Parliament actually opens today and it begins?
Yeah. Yeah, so today is the official sort of public opening of the 52nd Parliament.
What are your thoughts on the relationship to the monarchy?
I think it's great. I like the Queen. I actually think it's a really good backstop for New Zealand. The way I look at it is that there has been in recent history an elected Prime Minister or President, one or the other, can't remember which nation it was, but they then went and changed the constitution of their parliament so that they couldn't be unelected. Now, that couldn't happen here because the Governor-General has to sign off on all our laws. So the Governor-General is the backstop and the Queen is the backstop to anybody trying to create a sort of a dictatorship here in New Zealand. And I like that.
So the Governor-General is in place of the Queen?
Yeah.
Do you think if there was a move to sort of have a written constitution and if that was to be written out, where would New Zealand First stand on that?
I don't know. It's not something that our... And I think it would have to be a conscience vote for the whole of the parliament. But we haven't had a conversation about that as a caucus or as a party.
What do you mean by conscience vote?
Well, a conscience vote means that each member would be able to vote either for or against as their own conscience allows them to do. I mean, at the moment, particularly that's on the four sins, what we call the four sins, and that's a parliamentary term. It is among the parliamentarians. So that's gambling, prostitution, trading on a Sunday, and alcohol. Those are called the four sins. And generally, if you're going to make any changes to legislation around them, it's done on a conscience vote basis, which means people don't have to vote their party line. They can actually just vote independently.
How are your portfolios going?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm certainly in the state I'm trying to describe myself in. I'm trying to absorb as much information as possible as fast as possible. So, because I've got, you know, quite large portfolios, and the more, for example, like Oranga Tamariki, I suppose everybody has a clear understanding of what the job is inside that particular area, and it's 100% sort of child focused. And I addressed my first gathering of 217 case managers and senior managers of Oranga Tamariki yesterday. So that's clear. The more I get into the Department of Internal Affairs, the more I find that I'm responsible for. For example, I'm responsible for the fire service, which I didn't really, you know that till I got into the role. So it's definitely a period of absorbing as much information as possible so that, you know, I can get across all the decision making I need to as fast as possible.
And have you been able to make any plans?
We've got plans, but I think right now I'm a great believer in I need to listen first. So I can't come in with a preconceived idea that I know everything that goes on in these portfolios and what should be done to change them. So there's certainly, you know, the government has a 100-day plan, so there's parts of those that I'm working on. And there are things that were gained during the negotiations that are also fall in my portfolio area. So there are pieces of work that have started, but mostly right now I just want to get across what is actually happening there without bias, because otherwise I could miss something really important.
What will replace national standards?
Oh, okay. So as far as, well, this is my recommendation. This is what I campaigned on. And I haven't had my delegations as the Associate Minister of Education yet from Chris Hipkins, but... at the back of the New Zealand curriculum have always been progressions, two-year progressions for children. So if somebody wants to get that and just look in the back of it, they're there. They were always used before. And they're a little bit like a Plunkett growth chart. So, you know, when you take your baby to actually go to Plunkett and they weigh it and they measure it, they don't say, oh, it's not on the line, so therefore it's below the standard, right? They say, well, if it's in within this band, it's a normal average child. And if it's over here on the band, we need to do some extra work to keep checking on how we can move it into the normal band. And if it's up at this end, it's way above what is the average. So that's exactly what we used to have for education in the back of the New Zealand curriculum. So that's what I'm hoping, and that's a conversation I'm having with Chris Hipkins, that we will go back to those curriculum level bands and we'll just find a way. Those were never collected centrally. So schools knew where every child was, but we didn't collect it centrally. So how can we do that to make sure that while we're using formative assessment, we know, have a picture across the country of how our children are doing.
And will that include, will there be room for support for teachers with students on this band?
Yes, well, that's part of the negotiations that New Zealand First sort of got agreement on, was that we would be doing an investigation about widening the screening schools when children went into school, so the school entry data, and then providing more support just directly on need. So you know how we've been having this conversation about decile ratings and how they're a really bad way of funding schools to deal with children who have needs. So this is, that's the conversation we're having, widening the screening tools and doing a bit more like Finland does and actually funding on an equity basis. And then at the other end, we also got funding, an agreement that we would fund more programs for gifted and talented children so that we can extend. So you have to actually support, you know, all children and their needs across the schooling system.
So will you be, changing the decile system also?
I'm pretty sure that nobody's, again, this is really a question for the Minister of Education, I suppose, but it's a conversation that he and I will be having because nobody's happy with the decile funding system.
The TPPA, where do you sort of, where does New Zealand First sit on that and how do you feel about it going ahead?
Well, we're in agreement with, you know, our coalition partners, the Labor Party, and the fact that it's the ISDS clauses that are the big issue inside that, inside the TPP, and it's now the TPP 11. So so it's the ISDS clauses that all our negotiators and, you know, right now the Prime Minister's going to be there. I'm not sure if she's there today or tomorrow. Definitely tomorrow she's there at APEC having conversations about that. The Foreign Minister, Winston Peters, is there having conversations about that. David Parker, the Minister for Trade, is there having conversations about that. So it's the ISDS clauses. It's the way that we handle disputes that is the biggest problem inside the TPP 11. We've carved out a whole lot of other bits and pieces, but that is still the biggest issue. So there's several solutions on the table, and I'm not qualified or, you know, in the right role to discuss them sort of publicly, but we're in agreement. That's a major focus, is those clauses.
And there are no other concerns?
I'm not saying there's no other concerns, but that's the major concern, because all the other ones can be worked out, but that one particularly has been something that I know, like for Jane Kelsey and others who marched on the street, it really was that clause that became an issue, because it sort of went to sovereignty.
So wider international trade is on the table. There's reports that Winston wants to reopen trade with Russia.
I think he wants to reopen conversations, because there was no, and I'm talking, I think what he said publicly is, we were having trade discussions with Russia, and then they were stopped by the national government. No real explanation was given, recognising, however, that there had been the Ukraine incident. And if that's a reason, then that's a reason. But what he's saying is that he believes that we need to reopen conversations, because the only way, and then, you know, those conversations might lead to a solution for the Ukraine in some way.
With major differences in party lines in a coalition, I'm just curious, what does happen? How do you resolve something where you or Labor are completely different on a position of something?
Yeah, well, we have what we call a coalition management sort of panel that will get pulled together. So that would probably be the chief of staff. We might get somebody independent that's well respected by both our parties, and sit down and have that conversation. So it's the same way it was done between 2005 and 2011 with the Labor Party and New Zealand First at that time. They had a coalition management team, and when issues arose, then we went into mediation, basically.
Well, good luck for today.
Thank you.
And we may or may not talk to you next week.
Okay, Lily. It'll be interesting. I think there might be a bit of argy-bargy today as well. I've got a funny feeling that the opposition is planning something.
Okay.
So
we'll look
watching out
for that.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Okay,
thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party. The Wire.